suddenly felt all of his guts drop back into place. The world took on a little of its former color. He began to tremble. The unlit cigarette jittered between his lips.
"What's going on? What do you know? You're Bannerman, you said?"
"Castle County Sheriff, that's right. And I'll try to put you in the picture if you'll give me a minute."
"Yes, okay."
Now he was afraid. Everything seemed to be going too fast.
"Officer Fisher was dispatched to your home at 83 Larch Street, as per your request, at 12:34 this morning. He ascertained that there was no car in the driveway or in the garage. He rang the front doorbell repeatedly, and when there was no answer, he let himself in, using the key over the porch eave. He found that the house had been severely vandalized. Furnishings were overturned, liquor bottles broken, soap powder had been poured over the floor and the built-ins of the kitchen."
"Jesus, Kemp," Fick whispered, his whirling mind fixed on the note. "Do you have any questions?" He remembered thinking that note, regardless of everything else, was a disquieting index into the man's psychology. A vicious act of revenge for being dumped. What had Kemp done now? What had he done besides go through their house like a harpy on the warpath?
"Mr. Trenton? I'm here."
Bannerman cleared his throat, as if he were having some difficulty with the next. "Officer Fisher proceeded upstairs. The upstairs had not been vandalized, but he found traces of, some whitish fluid, most probably semen, on the bedspread in the master bedroom." And in an unwitting comic ellipsis, he added, "The bed did not appear to have been slept in."
"Where's my wife?" Vic shouted into the phone. "Where's my boy? Don't you have any idea?"
"Take it easy," Roger said, and put a hand on Vic's shoulder.
Roger could afford to say take it easy. His wife was home in bed, so were his twin girls.
Vic shook the hand off.
"Mr. Trenton, all I can tell you right now is that a team of state police detectives are on the scene, and my own men are assisting. Neither the master bedroom nor your son's room appear to have been disturbed."
"Except for the cum on our bed, you mean?" Vic said savagely, and Roger flinched as if struck. His mouth dropped open in a gape.
"Yes, well, that." Bannerman sounded embarrassed. "But what I mean is that there are no signs of, violence against person or persons. It looks like straight vandalism."
"Then where are Donna and Tad?"
The harshness was now breaking up into bewilderment, and he felt the sting of helpless little boy tears at the corners of his eyes.
"At this time, we have no idea."
"Kemp, my God, what if Kemp has them?"
For just a moment, a confusing flash of the dream he'd had the previous night recurred. Donna and Tad hiding in their cave, menaced by some terrible beast. Then it was gone.
"If you have any idea of who might be behind this, Mr. Trenton..."
"I'm going out to the airport and rent a car," Vic said. "I can be there by 5 o'clock.
Patiently, Bannerman said, "Yes, Mr. Trenton, but if your wife and son's disappearance is somehow connected with this vandalism, time could be a very precious commodity. If you have even the slightest idea of who might bear a grudge against you and your wife, either real or imagined..."
"Kemp," Vic said in a small, strangled voice. He couldn't hold the tears back now. The tears were going to come. He could feel them running down his face. "Kemp did it. I'm sure it was Kemp. Oh, my Christ, what if he's got them?"
"Who is this Kemp?" Bannerman asked. His voice was not embarrassed now. It was sharp and demanding. He held the phone in his right hand. He put his left hand over his eyes, shutting out Roger, shutting out the hotel room, the sound of the TV, everything. Now he was in blackness, alone, with the unsteady sound of his voice and the hot, shifting texture of his tears.
"Steve Kemp," he said. "Stephen Kemp. He ran a place called the Village Stripper there in town. He's gone now. At least my wife said he was gone. He and my wife, Donna, they had an affair, banging each other. It didn't last long. She told him it was over. I found out because he wrote me a note. It was a pretty ugly note. He was getting his own back, I guess. I guess he didn't like to get brushed off much. It sounds like a grander version of that note."
He rubbed his hand viciously across his eyes, making a galaxy of red shooting stars.
Maybe he didn't like it that the marriage didn't just blow apart, or maybe he's just fucked up. Donna said he got fucked up when he lost a tennis match. Wouldn't shake hands over the net. It's a question... Suddenly, his voice was gone, and he had to clear his throat before it would come back. There was a band around his chest, tightening and loosening, then tightening again. I think it's a question of how far he might go. He could have taken them, Bannerman. He's capable of it, from what I know of him. There was a silence at the other end. No, not quite silence. The scratching of a pencil on paper. Roger put his hand on Vic's shoulder again, and this time he let it stay, grateful for the warmth. He felt very cold. Mr. Trenton, do you have the note Kemp sent you? No, I tore it up. I'm sorry, but under the circumstances... Was it, by any chance, printed in block letters? Yes, yes, it was. Officer Fisher found a note written in block letters on the message board in the kitchen. It said, I left something upstairs for you, baby. Vic grunted a little. The last faint hope that it might have been someone else, a thief or maybe just kids, blew away. Come on upstairs and see what I left on the bed. It was Kemp. The line on the note minder at home would have fit right into Kemp's little note. The note seems to indicate that your wife wasn't there when he did it, Bannerman said. But even in his shocked state, Vic heard a false note in the sheriff's voice. She could have walked in while he was still there, and you know it, Vic said dully. Back from shopping, back from getting the carb adjusted on her car, anything. What sort of car did Kemp drive, you know? I don't think he had a car. He had a van. Color? I don't know. Mr. Trenton, I'm going to suggest you come on up from Boston. I'm going to suggest that if you rent a car, you take it easy. It would be one hell of a note if your people turned up just fine and you got yourself killed on the interstate coming up here. Yes, all right. He didn't want to drive anywhere, fast or slow. He wanted to hide. Better still, he wanted to have the last 6 days over again. Another thing, sir. What's that? On your way up here, try to make a mental list of your wife's friends and acquaintances in the area. It's still perfectly possible that she could be spending the night with someone. Sure. The most important thing to remember right now is that there are no signs of violence. The whole downstairs is ripped to hell, Vic said. That sounds pretty fucking violent to me. Yes, Bannerman said uncomfortably. Well, I'll be there, Vic said. He hung up. Vic, I'm sorry, Roger said. Vic couldn't meet his old friend's eyes. Wearing the horns, he thought. Isn't that what the English call it? Now Roger knows I'm wearing the horns. It's all right, Vic said, starting to dress. All this on your mind, and you went ahead with the trip? What good would it have done to stay home, Vic asked. It happened. I only found out on Thursday. I thought some distance, time to think, perspective. I don't know all the stupid goddamn things I thought. Now this. Not your fault, Roger said earnestly. Raj, at this point, I don't know what's my fault and what isn't. I'm worried about Donna, and I'm out of my mind about Tad. I just want to get back there, and I'd like to get my hands on that fucker Kemp. His voice had been rising. It abruptly sank. His shoulders sagged. For a moment, he looked drawn and old and almost totally used up. Then he went to the suitcase on the floor and began to hunt for fresh clothes. Call Avis at the airport, would you, and get me a car? My wallet's there on the nightstand. They'll want the American Express number. I'll call for both of us. I'm going back with you. No. But nothing. Vic slipped into a dark blue shirt. He had it buttoned halfway up before he saw he had it wrong. One tail hung far below the other. He unbuttoned it and started again. He was in motion now, and being in motion was better. But that feeling of unreality persisted. He kept having thoughts about movie sets, where what looks like Italian marble is really just contact paper, where all the rooms end just above the camera's sight line, and where someone is always lurking in the background with a clapperboard. Scene number 41. Vic convinces Roger to keep on plugging. Take one. He was an actor, and this was some crazy, absurdist film, but it was undeniably better when the body was in motion. Hey, man. Roger, this changes nothing in the situation between AdWorks and the Sharp Company.